Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to VOA Learning English, As It Is. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. When you think about it, life is a series of ongoing connecting trips. Many of us start the day by commuting or traveling to work. We drop off our children at school. We may visit the doctor or go to the market to buy food. We rush home to see our families.
Life is more pleasant when these trips are easy and direct. Easier commuting means a higher quality of life. Being stuck in traffic is not easy or direct. Traffic delays can be stressful. They bring out the worst in some people.
Traffic delays reduce your quality of life. And some areas are worse than others. 3 of the 10 worst cities for traffic are in Southeast Asia. In the second half of the show, we will hear how the city with the worst traffic is taking steps to help that situation. But first, Anna tells us who has the world's worst traffic.
People who live in big cities spend a lot of time talking about traffic. Too many people on the roads can be a big problem. Not all traffic is the same. There are some terms you need to know when talking about traffic. One such term is gridlock. Gridlock is when nobody can go anywhere. The roads become one big parking lot. There is also stop and start traffic. This is when you move forward a little, but then stop. Move a little, then stop. Both are equally stressful. Traffic can be bumper to bumper. This means there are so many cars on the road that their bumpers seem to be touching. To idle means the engine of your car is running, but you are not moving anywhere. Another term to know is rush hour traffic. Rush hour traffic happens at about the same time every day, when people are commuting to and from work. But who in the world has the worst traffic? In 2014, the Castrol Magnatec Stop-Start Index examined traffic conditions in 78 cities around the world. Drivers in these areas used TomTom GPS devices. Each device measured the time spent in traffic and the traffic conditions they experienced. Castrol is an oil company based in the United Kingdom. The company says all this stop-start driving and idling hurts your car engine, and to help, it wants to sell you Castrol products. The study found an increase in both heavy traffic and stop-and-start driving. Here are the results. The top 10 cities with the worst traffic are Number 10, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Number 9, Guadalajara, Mexico. Number 8, Bangkok, Thailand. Number 7, Rome, Italy. Number 6, Moscow, Russia. Number 5, St. Petersburg, Russia. Number 4, Surabaya, Indonesia. Number 3, Mexico City, Mexico. Number 2, Istanbul, Turkey. And coming in at number 1 with the worst traffic on the planet is Jakarta, Indonesia. In China, Shanghai's traffic problems were found to be worse than Beijing's. Drivers in Shanghai spend 33% of their time on the road idling. People in Beijing spend 27% of their travel time idling, doing nothing but running their engines and wasting fuel. So what can cities do to reduce traffic problems? One thing cities can do is to supply more public transportation. Another thing cities can do to limit traffic is to charge money to drive in certain parts of a city. Until cities with traffic problems find ways to get people from point A to point B more efficiently, they can only envy people in Tampere, Finland, and Rotterdam in the Netherlands. The survey found that these two cities have the fastest moving traffic. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to As It Is. Just heard about the cities with some of the worst traffic on the planet. One study finds that Jakarta has some of the worst traffic in the world.
The Indonesian capital, Jakarta, has long been considered an example of a major city that cannot stop nor support its continuing growth.
After years of delays, Jakarta is taking action to deal with perhaps its most pressing problem, traffic gridlock. Jonathan Evans has more on the story.
Jakarta's traffic problems are getting worse. The Jakarta area is home to nearly 30 million people, and the number keeps growing. More than 1,000 additional vehicles crowd onto the city's streets every day. But now, work has begun on a huge mass transit train system that could help ease traffic congestion. The project was delayed for 5 years. During that time, officials worked to persuade landowners and businesses to make short-term sacrifices to prevent even more gridlock. Dono Bustami is president of MRT Jakarta, the city-owned company responsible for building the train system. He says the city does not have a choice. The people of Jakarta, he says, must make sacrifices for a period of time for the future of their city. Part one of this project is a 16-kilometer train line running south to north. This line will have 13 stations, with some underground and others above ground. The city was able to get a $1.5 billion loan from Japan to finance this part of the project. The work is set to be completed by 2018. Part two will extend farther north. This phase is expected to cost another $1.5 billion. Another train line is under consideration. It would stretch 87 kilometers from east to west. Work on this project is causing additional traffic problems. Sufyan Wanandi is an advisor to Indonesian Vice President Yusuf Kalla. He says for Jakarta to develop and modernize, both the people and the government need to change their way of thinking. For now, Jakarta residents are still stuck in traffic. But this mass transportation project could put the city on the road to a more sustainable future. I'm Jonathan Evans.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again for more Learning English programs on The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. Every people has its own way of saying things, its own special expressions. Some of these expressions are easy to understand. The words create a picture in your mind. As easy as falling off a log is one such expression. It describes a job that does not take much effort. If you ever tried to walk on a fallen tree log, you understand what the expression means. It is easier to fall off the log than to stay on it. The expression is often used today. For example, you might hear a student say to her friend that her spelling test was as easy as falling off a log. There are several other expressions that mean the same thing, and their meaning is as easy to understand as falling off a log. One is easy as pie. Nothing is easier than eating a piece of sweet, juicy pie, unless it is a piece of cake. Piece of cake is another expression that means something is extremely easy to do. A friend might tell you that his new job was a piece of cake. Another expression is as easy as shooting fish in a barrel. It is hard to imagine why anyone would want to shoot fish in a barrel. But clearly, fish in a barrel would be much easier to shoot than fish in a stream. In fact, it would be as easy as falling off a log. Sometimes, things that come to us easily also leave us just as easily. In fact, there is an expression, easy come, easy go, that recognizes this. You may win a lot of money in a lottery, then spend it all in a few days. Easy come, easy go. When life itself is easy, when you have no cares or problems, you are on Easy Street. Everyone wants to live on that imaginary street. Another easy expression is to go easy on a person. It means to treat a person kindly or gently, especially in a situation where you might be expected to be angry with him. A wife might urge her husband to go easy on their son because the boy did not mean to wreck the car. If it is necessary to borrow some money to fix the car, you should look for a friend who is an easy touch. An easy touch, or a soft touch, is someone who is kind and helpful. He would easily agree to lend you the money. And one last expression, one that means do not worry or work too hard. Try to keep away from difficult situations. Take it easy until we meet again. You have been listening to the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. I'm Bob Doty. Thank you.
I'm Nicole Nichols.
And I'm Steve Ember with the VOA Special English Program, People in America. Today we tell about one of the great labor activists, Cesar Chavez. He organized the first successful farm workers' union in American history.
Cesar Chavez was born on a small farm near Yuma, Arizona, in 1927. In the late 19th century, Cesario Chavez, Cesar's grandfather, had started the Chavez family farm after escaping slavery on a Mexican farm. Cesar Chavez spent his earliest years on this farm. When he was 10 years old, however, the economic conditions of the Great Depression forced his parents to give up the family farm. He then became a migrant farm worker, along with the rest of his family. The Chavez family joined thousands of other farm workers who traveled around the state of California to harvest crops for farm owners. They traveled from place to place to harvest grapes, lettuce, beets, and many other crops. They worked very hard and received little pay. These migrant workers had no permanent homes. They lived in dirty, crowded camps. They had no bathrooms, electricity, or running water. Like the Chavez family, most of them came from Mexico.
Because his family traveled from place to place, Cesar Chavez attended more than 30 schools as a child. He learned to read and write from his grandmother. Mama Telia also taught him about the Catholic religion. Religion later became an important tool for Mr. Chavez. He used religion to organize Mexican farm workers who were Catholic. Cesar's mother, Juana, taught him much about the importance of leading a nonviolent life. His mother was one of the greatest influences on his use of nonviolent methods to organize farm workers. His other influences were the Indian activist Mahatma Gandhi and American civil rights leader Martin Luther King, Jr. Mr. Chavez said his real education began when he met the Catholic leader Father Donald McDonnell. Cesar Chavez learned about the economics of farm workers from the priest. He also learned about Gandhi's nonviolent political actions, as well as those of other great nonviolent leaders throughout history.
In 1948, Mr. Chavez married Helena Fabela, whom he met while working in the grape fields of Central California. They settled in Sal Cipuedes. Later, while Mr. Chavez worked for little or no money to organize farm workers, his wife harvested crops. In order to support their 8 children, she worked under the same bad conditions that Mr. Chavez was fighting against. There were other important influences in his life. In 1952, Mr. Chavez met Fred Ross, an organizer with a workers' rights group called the Community Service Organization. Mr. Chavez called Mr. Ross the best organizer he ever met. Mr. Ross explained how poor people could build power. Mr. Chavez agreed to work for the Community Service Organization.
Mr. Chavez worked for the organization for about 10 years. During that time, he helped more than 500,000 Latino citizens to vote. He also gained old age retirement money for 50,000 Mexican immigrants. He served as the organization's national director. However, in 1962, he left the organization. He wanted to do more to help farm workers receive higher pay and better working conditions. He left his well-paid job to start organizing farm workers into a union. Mr. Chavez's work affected many people. For example, the father of Mexican-American musician Zac de la Rocha spent time working as an art director for Mr. Chavez. Much of the political music of de la Rocha's group, Rage Against the Machine, was about workers' rights, like this song, Bomb Track.
It took Mr. Chavez and Dolores Huerta, another former CSO organizer, 3 years of hard work to build the National Farm Workers Association. Mr. Chavez traveled from town to town to bring in new members. He held small meetings at workers' houses to build support. The California-based organization held its first strike in 1965. The National Farm Workers Association became nationally known when it supported a strike against grape growers. The group joined a strike organized by Filipino workers of the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee. Mr. Chavez knew that those who acted nonviolently against violent action would gain popular support. Mr. Chavez asked that the strikers remain nonviolent, even though the farm owners and their supporters sometimes used violence.
1 month after the strike began, the group began to boycott grapes. They decided to direct their action against one company, the Schenley Corporation. The union followed grape trucks and demonstrated wherever the grapes were taken. Later, union members and Filipino workers began a 25-day march from Delano to Sacramento, California, to gain support for the boycott. Schenley later signed a labor agreement with the National Farm Workers Association. It was the first such agreement between farm workers and growers in the United States.
The union then began demonstrating against the DiGiorgio Corporation. It was one of the largest grape growers in California. DiGiorgio held a vote, and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters was chosen to represent the farm workers. But an investigation proved that the company and the Teamsters had cheated in the election. Another vote was held. Cesar Chavez agreed to combine his union with another, and the United Farm Workers Organizing Committee was formed. The farm workers elected Mr. Chavez's union to represent them. DiGiorgio soon signed a labor agreement with the union.
Mr. Chavez often went for long periods without food to protest the conditions under which the farm workers were forced to do their jobs. Mr. Chavez went on his first hunger strike, or fast, in 1968. He did not eat for 25 days. He was called a hero for taking this kind of personal action to support the farm workers. The union then took action against Jomara Vineyards Corporation, the largest producer of table grapes in the United States. It organized a boycott against the company's products. The boycott extended to all California table grapes. By 1970, the company agreed to sign contracts. A number of other growers did as well. By this time, the grape strike had lasted for 5 years. It was the longest strike and boycott in United States labor history. Cesar Chavez had built a nationwide coalition of support among unions, church groups, students, minorities, and other Americans.
By 1973, the union had changed its name to the United Farm Workers of America. It called for another national boycott against grape growers, as relations again became tense. By 1975, a reported 17 million Americans were refusing to buy non-union grapes. The union's hard work helped in getting the Agricultural Labor Relations Act passed in California under Governor Jerry Brown. It was the first law in the nation that protected the rights of farm workers.
By the 1980s, the UFW had helped tens of thousands of farm workers gain higher pay, medical care, retirement benefits, and better working and living conditions. But relations between workers and growers in California worsened under a new state government. Boycotts were again organized against the grape industry. In 1988, at the age of 61, Mr. Chavez began another hunger strike. That fast lasted for 36 days and almost killed him. The fast was to protest the poisoning of grape workers and their children by the dangerous chemicals growers used to kill insects. In 1984, Cesar Chavez made this speech predicting the future success of his efforts for Latinos.
Like the other immigrant groups, the day will come when we win the economic and political rewards which are in keeping with our numbers in society. The day will come when the politicians will do the right thing for our people out of political necessity and not out of charity or idealism.
Cesar Chavez died in 1993 at the age of 66. More than 40,000 people attended his funeral. A year later, President Clinton awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor in the United States. The United Farm Workers Union still fights for the rights of farm workers throughout the United States. Many schools, streets, parks, libraries, and other public buildings have been named after Cesar Chavez. The great labor leader always believed in the words, si se puede, it can be done.
This special English program was written and produced by Robert Brumfield. Our studio engineer was Sulaiman Tarawali. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Nicole Nichols. Join us again next week for another People in America program on The Voice of America.